Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.
Morena, Kirsten, how are you?
Morena, I am good, but it is cool.
It is cold. It's officially wintry, even in Auckland.
Yeah, so hopefully, I don't know if this warms you up. The instrument, we're talking about an instrument today. It can have warm or cool tones, actually.
Ooh, yes. Nice.
So we're talking about the flute, which is one of the oldest instruments, I think, that they found humans using.
Really?
They found 43,000-year-old ones.
Wow-wee.
I know.
That's amazing.
Old humans, I guess, for some reason, no matter where they were, found empty tubes and started blowing on it.
I mean, it's like that kind of thing where you have like a bottle as a kid and you blow, or as an adult, and you blow on it and you make a noise. It seems primal to make strange sounds
I guess humans, wherever they were, you know, bamboo flutes. So China has a flute tradition, India, and in the West, you know, coming through the sort of classical era in the last couple hundred years, we get what we call sort of the Western classical flute, which is the metal silver one. They can be silver plated or silver or
flash,
gold or platinum, with the millions of buttons, and you play it on the side.
Yes.
And you have to hold your arms up in the air.
I played the flute in the school orchestra. I used to get in trouble for not actually playing very often, but pretending to play.
Why would you do that?
Because then you have to practice. I was 14, you know. Some people, they're good at practicing. Me, I was good at skiving off and then playing the bits I liked playing and then just going and pretending to play.
And then you have to do the tongue thing.
Yeah,
the flautist.
That is the flautist's mouth. It's quite weird if you try and do it.
Yeah. I think it's hard to get a good tone from a flute.
Yeah.
You need a good relationship.
It was a strong second flute line, not in the first flutes. Couldn't quite make it there.
Well, the weird thing about some of the pop songs with flutes in it, I mean, okay, sometimes it's a sample, right? Or sometimes they brought in a flute player.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like the lead singer of a band happened to play the flute. How weird is that?
They're like, you know what? I'm going to whip out this skill that I haven't used for a while.
Bro, you play the flute? And they're like, yeah, I do. I guess it's that thing in Western countries where, you know, you start to learn a classical instrument as a kid.
Got you.
And that's just, it's a lot easier to carry than a cello.
It is indeed. It is indeed. So how did we kind of get to this space? I'm going to hit play on the first track, and I think that will kind of set the scene a little bit for what we're talking about.
So does it work? You know, does it belong in popular music?
Yeah, totally, I think.
So right now it's playing with everybody else. Like, it's not doing its own thing. It's playing the main riff.
So this is Golden Earring.
Okay, I had never heard of this band before.
Big Tree Blue Sea.
They're a Dutch band that were really big in the 60s. They Kiss and Aerosmith opened for them on their American tour.
Whoa!
So this is 1970, and for those of you music connoisseurs, you can tell.
Yeah. Even for those of you who aren't, I feel like this is just so obviously the 70s. Okay, so a lot of these kind of like rock bands in the 70s, a lot of them, especially in the prog realm, did have these backgrounds.
A classical background. So, you know, early rock and roll was, you know, club music. It was raunchy, you know, it was about dancing and booty. And then in the early mid-60s, you get groups like the Beatles, who were from sort of art school background, British guys, classical backgrounds. You know, because if you tell your parents I want to do music, well, then you have to go to classical.
You get the violin and you get the flute.
Yeah, and so they tried bringing it into their rock music. And so in like psychedelia and prog, it was kind of allowed. And I don't know if
you are allowed a flute.
If it always worked. I mean, the iconic one we're not playing because it's just too iconic is Jethro Tull.
Yeah. I also feel like you can all, if I say Jethro Tull, you can all hear it in your heads. You don't need to hear it actually in your ears.
I wanted to show it was more than just them, you know?
Ooh.
Ooh.
This is quite beautiful.
It's very nice. This is a nice tone, too.
So we were getting that breathy tone at the beginning there, and now we're getting this
Because some people think the flute is like high pitched. I mean, it is, but you can get a lot of warmth.
You can also get big flutes that take you low, like bassy, yes. bassy flutes. I mean, it's quite nice. It does. I do feel like we're in the soundtrack to some sort of like 1970s. I'm seeing a lot of moustaches, a lot of sideburns going on here.
Scarfs, multiple scarfs.
Cars and maybe some sort of like heist going on. Oh yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, is it kitschy? Is it novelty? I mean, one of the other reasons I wanted to talk about it is like the last 3-4 years in hip hop with Lizzo.
Yeah.
Again, she plays the flute, you know, like she happens to play it.
You know, she is also classically trained. Like, yeah. She's a classically trained flautist bringing it right into pop music.
She had this idea, I'd love flute on this one song. No, it's part of who she is. And then the iconic Future's Mask Off, which,
I mean. Someone says, as someone else is texting in about Golden Earring, saying, Wall of Dolls, I think you will love it. Nice vibra-slap. Great band for the flute.
Really? Okay.
There's a lot going on here, but I'm enjoying it, actually, I have to say. And apparently Golden Earring's big hit was called Radar Love. Nick reckons it's pretty good. We've got Golden Earring fans on the text machine today.
All you Golden Earring fans. For some reason, I missed them. My whole musical life, I'd missed them until this week.
Someone else has texted in Herbie Mann, Ian Anderson, and Jeremy Steig, but also fake flute on Mellotron, like in Stairway to Heaven. I've never really noticed that before.
Yeah, I had to really try to make sure when was I hearing. I mean, obviously a sample's fine too, and that's still flute.
I've swapped songs. Sorry, okay. Golden Earring. It was a long bit of flute in that track.
Okay, so this is Roland Kirk. So he's a jazz flautist. So that was the other way it snuck in. So it snuck in through classical, but jazz, which, you know, kind of uses quite similar to a classical orchestra. And Roland Kirk was such an iconic flute player. He played on Quincy Jones's bossa nova flute, you know, the Austin Powers one.
Oh, true.
Yeah, so that's him. But this is one of his own songs. In fact, this song was covered by Ian Anderson.
Oh, true, okay.
Like 3 years later, so this is 1965.
I'm enjoying this. Oh, here we go.
He was a multi-instrumentalist, and he would like hang multiple instruments around his neck, and he could play more than one at a time somehow with different sides of his mouth.
Wow. There was a girl at my high school who could play two recorders at once. That was pretty cool. Anyway, that's a digression. It was pretty impressive.
Hey, no, it is. Well, because, I mean, she should have gone in, because this guy apparently was just an amazing performer. Lots of banter, mucking around with showing off with all these instruments.
We've had two one-time at Bandcamp texts coming through.
Oh, God, sorry. I should have predicted that, but I did not. Good on you guys.
How about all that flute and early Kraftwerk, later switched for synth, but similar sounds for a while? That's an interesting point.
That doesn't ring a bell, but all right.
A lot of people using flute that I kind of hadn't really thought about it. Saint Germain have done a good flute, apparently.
Okay.
A few shout-outs for local bands that have done some good flute, Nine Eye Express. Shout-out to J.Y. Lee, who is Auckland's go-to flautist.
Okay.
For local music.
Now, also, this guy, Roland Kirk, he passed in 1977 at age 42. So I'm wondering if he had lived longer, you know, would he have done more and we would, you know, his career would have.
My Bloody Valentine had a live flautist on stage during their Loveless tour in 1991. That is the least likely band I would have thought of having. I would have thought maybe the Cocteau Twins would have had a bit of flute in there, but I could see My Bloody Valentine getting in on that. King Gizzard have a flute album. Yeah, they do. They're big nerds. They've got a lot of proggy stuff going on in their records.
So, you know, it's funny with everyone saying all these great things, so it's like really there, but it still seems like an oddity to me. I'm not quite sure. Niche, you know, exception, or is it just there and we just need to say it's all throughout popular music? I'm not convinced yet.
I think we should jump into our last track today, which will be absolutely no stranger to BFM listeners.
Move me.
Bit of Beastie Boys.
So now they cheated in that this is a sample.
Cheating.
But the sample they've used is from a 1966 band, so right around the time is Roland Kirk, called The Blues Project, that was very famous for having this jazz flute song. And so this was on everybody's list. You know, the original song was on everybody's list of songs with pop songs with flute. But then that riff itself is based on a Bach.
Oh, true.
So this is sort of multiple layers of flute being used in sort of rock jazz in the 60s, classical, up to then sort of hip-hop in 1994.
So it's interesting, though, because when you start seeing it in, like, more contemporary pop music, I mean, this song is not a new song now, but it is sitting in a realm which sounds more like the music we hear today.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, like, someone like Lizzo, in this is just genuinely part of the track. Lizzo seems to use flute more like a gimmick, like she's amazing at it, but it's kind of part of her stage performance. It's part of her, like,
personality. I'm not sure how much it fits in. You know, that's
why
it has
to be.
It's fun,
though. I mean, it's awesome. I'm not ragging on it. It's just it's a different way of approaching
it. That's why I do like Migos' Mask Off. You know, like, I feel like that fit. It didn't seem gimmicky. It was just like the right
sound. Just part of the track. Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, there is some other good flute stuff in hip-hop. Jay-Z's Big Pimpin', but the cool thing about Lizzo is that she's playing it. It's not a sample.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Totally. Hey, samples are cool too, just differently cool. Jeremy Steig's Howling for Judy was also heavily sampled by the Beastie Boys on Sure Shit as well. So there you go.
See, they are amazing samplers.
They are. Know? They are the kings of like magpieing from different genres and places as well. I've enjoyed a bit of a flute moment this morning.
Yeah,
thank you for bringing
fun.
That
it's
in.
It's such a beautiful, lovely sound. You know,
it is always kind of like unexpected when it pops up in a track, even though, as has been evidenced by all the texts we've got,
I know
loads of people have sent in, you know, their favorite flute bits, but I still feel like it always is like, oh cool, they're using the flute.
I know, it's out of place.
So you know what this band needs right now? We need a flautist.
But anyway, all you young people in the orchestra, you know, don't
stay true.
Swear. Yeah.
Stay true, young orchestra nerds. Thank you very much. What are we going to be doing next week, Kirsten?
It's a record company called 88 Rising.
Awesome. Cool. Sounds great. We'll see you then.
That was Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimpke.
We are going